With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is Jesse Zurawell and Perspective on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I'm Jesse Zurawell, your host for the hour. With me today is Debbie Evans. Debbie is a retired NHS nurse, a former advisor to the UK's Department of Health, and currently nursing correspondent for UK Column News, where she also publishes a weekly blog. Debbie, how are you this week?
Jesse, lovely to be back. Oh, Jesse, how am I this week? I'm firing on all cylinders this week. I'm really rattled at not just what's going on globally, because that's bad enough, but obviously I'm looking at what's going on here in the UK. And as we know, you know, if something happens in the USA, it normally follows that it happens in the UK. If something happens in Australia, again, it normally follows. So we all kind of follow the same path in the end. And I'm seeing some very, very worrying signs emerging here in the UK. And you can guess what I'm going to be referring to, of course, my very favourite subject, the MHRA, and Dame June Rain, and the advent of this new jab, which, in my opinion, should not be anywhere near the UK population. And in fact, it shouldn't be near, in my opinion. It was designed for a developed world. It shouldn't be a developing world. It shouldn't be in any of the developed world countries. So a lot's rattled my cage this week. And a lot of people are showing an amazing amount of interest now in the MHRA, in regulators. What is a regulator, for example? Because clearly we don't have one. And that's not just us here in the UK. That's you guys in the USA, it's the FDA, the EMA, all of these regulators, in my opinion, are completely corrupt. And June Rain revealed the agenda, as I'm sure you probably heard or saw on the news on UK Column yesterday. So the agenda is clear. We're now no longer living in a world of pharmacovigilance. And for many people, pharmacovigilance was a new word. You know, what does that mean? That means that the medicines that you're getting, if they are novel or new or experimental, they have to be under intense scrutiny. So many of them in the UK, we have a black triangle. It's called black triangle medication. I believe in the USA, I think you have black box. Just to identify something that's got to be intensely scrutinized. Well, we're going to be kicking pharmacovigilance down the road now. It's gone. It's gone, like pretty much every other system that we've become used to. And we are now entering into a world of synthetic biology. We're entering into a world of pharmacogenomics. And that's where it gets really dangerous. So, yeah, by bragging and boasting, which Dame June Rain and the board of the MHRA seem to be quite keen on doing, they expose themselves. And when you expose yourself, you drop your mask a little bit. And people like me and many others of our UK Column audience get to see what the real agenda is. So, yeah, it's been an interesting week, Jesse. I will talk about Dame June Rain and the MHRA forever and a day, if you'd let me. So I'll stop to let you talk about, to let you interrupt me.
Well, let's talk about what she was recently up to. You brought up so many important points there, and I want to try to get to all of them. And I think we can do that or get close to doing that by talking about Dame June Rain's recent speech at the PHG Foundation. And you covered this for UK Column News yesterday. And I don't want to steal UKC's thunder, but I think this is a very important development and speaks to where things are headed globally in terms of the fourth industrial revolution and digitizing everything, making everything in silico or derived from a computer, from algorithms, from artificial intelligence. And I'm looking here at a screenshot from your coverage of June Rain speaking at the PHG Foundation, whose motto is making science work for health. And next to a small picture of her speaking at a lectern, there's a screenshot, there's a panel from a slide from her presentation, Real World Data to Support Safety and Innovation. And there is something called the CPRD that is noted, as well as various data points. And there's one, it's not a data point, but it speaks about how the data is used, collected, used. It says longitudinal, and underneath that, cradle to grave. And on the left side of those words, there's a silhouette of a pregnant woman, a silhouette like you'd see on a public bathroom sign for men's room or women's room. And then on the right side of the words, there's a similar silhouette, but it's an elderly man leaning on a cane. And we can get into this in more detail, but this to me speaks of this along with clinical impact awards for healthcare practitioners, speaks to me of the impact investing aspect of the fourth industrial revolution and how that is based on data that is collected from cradle to grave, whether we're talking about healthcare or we're talking about education, and using this data not just to predict behavior, but to engineer behavior and to commodify that behavior. So a bunch I put out there, but let's talk about first PHG Foundation. What is that? And what is the CPRD? And anything else you'd like to add to this, please feel free to do so.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is really interesting. And I would say to everybody that's listening, you know, go and have a look at this YouTube, because when I clicked into it originally, there were only 10 views on it. I think there's probably about 60 now, but you can find it on YouTube. It's under PHG Foundation. And it's called Translating Science into Healthcare. What is the regulator's role? PHG are a think tank that automatically flags up red flags in my head. They're a think tank. They're based in Cambridge, and it's basically genomics. That's, you know, let's cut straight to the chase here. It's genomics. So the MHRA have been working very closely with all things genomic, everything, and the CPRD. Is because we live in the UK, we only have access to the NHS. We have no access to any other health service. If, God forbid, we collapse outside, despite what we want, we will get scooped up by the NHS. Now, the MHRA are living on data. They want real-world data, and that's what COVID's been all about. It's the first opportunity that scientists have ever had to real world data, and they're hungry for it. So in the UK, the MHRA want 60 million, that's 60 million of us, they want our data, and they want it in any way, shape or form, and it doesn't matter how they get it, they're ruthless. So CPRD is a direct database that links the MHRA directly with general practitioners, that's family doctors. So if your family doctor has signed up, and they will have signed a non-disclosure agreement, and they don't have to tell you that they've signed up. But if they've signed up to be part of CPRD, that means that your data, your participation in any kind of clinical test or trial or any kind of therapeutic test could be sent, albeit anonymized, to research academies, to the pharmaceutical companies, and to the MHRA direct. Now, currently, 37% of GP practices have signed up for this. And that's quite alarming. You know, that's quite a high percentage. And the NHS app, and I'm sure, you know, every country's got their own app. The NHS app will also give them access to real world data. And of course, what we're looking at ultimately is going to be a one app for all. You know, a company, one of the biggest companies that exists that nobody's ever heard of, is in China called Tencent. And that company has designed this one app where you've got all your health records, all your access to health treatment and advice, but also your bank details, your identification details, anything that you buy online, anything that you look at online, all of it will be available through one app. So the MHRA are in for the data. And the data will help them. They want everybody genomic sequence. Pharmacogenomics is the way forward. So what is pharmacogenomics at the end of the day? Pharmacogenomics is it's a research field that studies people's genes to see how they respond to medication. So that's very precise. So what they're trying to do is genomic sequence everybody. And then they're going to deliver what's called personalized medicine, personalized prescribing, so that the manufacturing process that we're used to is going to go. And the manufacturing will be done by your bed or in your home, because you will be genomic sequenced, and whatever is administered to you will apparently not give you any adverse reactions, because adverse reactions cost the NHS a lot of money. I mean, 530 million just on hospital admissions. And so what they want to do now is to prevent the next pandemic, to prevent the next serious adverse reaction. So they intend to use the UK population as lab rats for real world data, and not in anybody's best interest, least of all the British public. And June Rain is really excited about this. Pharmacogenetics, she says, is the opportunity for safer and more efficient pharmacotherapy. This is absolutely insane. This is dangerous. And she also says in this lecture, which is it's terrifying. She says that they're going to start screening neonates, babies, for gentamicin. So do young parents know what's going to happen to their baby when they've delivered their baby, when their baby's being wrapped up and maybe having a little wash before being handed to dad? Do you know if your child has been genomic screened? Have you given permission? Is this what we want for the future? No, I don't think it is. And who changed the definition of regulator? Because clearly in this video, June Rain says that the MHRA, their role has changed. It's changing from watchdog to enabler. Well, who sat down and decided that the regulator was now going to become the enabler? And if that is the case, and I would imagine, I'm not in America, so I don't know how your system works with the FDA, but I would imagine all regulators are working very similarly. So if we don't have regulators anymore, because they're saying quite clearly, we are no longer a regulator. So if we don't have a medicines regulator, then I would demand that a medicine regulator is appointed immediately, an independent medicine regulator. And I can think of many people who I trust that I would like to see on that board, including medical herbal practitioners as well, and holistic healers too. So currently, according to Dame June Rain, we don't have a medicine regulator. We just have a watchdog and an enabler. It's not a watchdog anymore. It's an enabler. Who are they enabling? They're enabling the pharmaceutical companies and the biotech companies to access our bodies. That's what they're doing. Without the regulator, in inverted commas, now the enabler, this whole thing would collapse. It would collapse. We have to disable the enabler. That's what we have to do.
I would add that they're enabling investors too, and investment opportunities. If you think about what they call precision pharmaceutical aspect of this, which I would contend is not precision pharmaceuticals. It's pharmaceutical, it's not precision, and it's based on a flawed understanding of genomics. But that said, if you think about the precision aspect of this and how people can be put on a track to see how they perform, how they respond and perform with regard to so-called precision treatments, that can become an investment opportunity for lots of people and entities out there who are interested in investing again in social impact and using data analytics to predict and steer how people will behave, how they'll react, and then to commodify that, to place bets on that, even carry out futures investing based on how you think or how you predict somebody will get well or not get well in the future under a certain treatment, in inverted commas, regimen. So I think that that's what this is enabling too. And it's not just enabling one thing, that's one part of it. But like with the COVID operation itself, it's multi-use, if I can use that term, for the perpetrators of it. So with the COVID operation, you have the obvious benefit, financial benefit to biotech, but then there's the obvious financial benefit to those who shape or manipulate, is a better word, the international monetary and financial system. There's an obvious benefit to those who are pushing the climate change agenda, to put it simply. Many parties with intersecting and sometimes not intersecting interests benefit from it. So I see this push by the MHRA working in much the same way. The PHG Foundation, just to give a little bit more info on that, you can find them at phgfoundation.org, and on their Who We Are page, it reads in part, "The PHG Foundation is a nonprofit think tank and a linked exempt charity of the University of Cambridge. We were originally founded as the Public Health Genomics Unit in 1997 and became the charitable PHG Foundation 10 years later." So that's who they are and where they come from in brief. And then to add to what we were talking about with the, let me just pull this up again, pardon me, the CPRD, that's the Clinical Practice Research Data Link. And according to Dame June Rain's presentation at the PHG Foundation, over 4 billion consultations coded from primary care records and linked to other data sources. And this is used in more than 20 countries worldwide. It contains over 30 years of electronic health record data collection. 90% of UK healthcare consultations are in primary care, which is where this data is largely, if not entirely, coming from. And as you mentioned, this includes about 60 million patients, or patient lives, as her slide refers to them, and over 16 million currently registered patients. And it's apparently representative of age, sex, and ethnicity. And the cradle to grave, I want to point out one more time, because when we talk about ed tech here in the US, or when the ed tech firms and investors talk about it. They talk about tracking children from cradle to gray, which is not quite grave, but close enough. So very similar language in tracking people throughout their whole lives, tracking their data, and not just for the sake of collecting their data, but again, using that to make money based on manipulating their behavior, a very insidious enterprise, to put it mildly.
Yeah, completely. And you know, the CPRD, the data link, you know, as you've rightly said, is in 30 countries. When we left the European Union, we were kind of on our own. The MHRA was like, oh, well, what do we do now? You know, we were part of the European Medicines Agency, and now we're on our own. And the European Medicines Agency was based in Canary Wharf. And of course, they, as soon as we left Europe, they got up, packed their bags, and off they went and left the premises empty. So the MHRA moved into the same building. And since we left Europe, the MHRA has linked up with Australia, Canada, Singapore, I think it is in Switzerland, in the Access Consortium, and also in Project Orbis, which is oversight by the FDA. And it's, again, an amalgamation of countries. So what we're seeing now is that if the FDA regulate something and approve something, or if another regulator in one of those countries approves something, then we will automatically get it in the UK. It doesn't need to be approved by our regulator. So something for you guys, for example, that's maybe approved by the MHRA, and I can tell you the MHRA are approving a lot of medicines that aren't being approved in the rest of the world. And, you know, if we've got time in maybe part two, we can come on and talk about Skycovion, because that's very, very worrying. And I think I've done quite a lot of research into that, and I'm very concerned about it. But clearly it means that other regulators will now be able to access, other countries will be able to access those drugs based on a foreign country's regulation. And also, it's now very apparent in the UK that GPs, who are consultants in their own right, GPs will be paid, incentivized, as you rightly said, with the new program that's coming in, to experiment on their patients. Now, this in itself is shocking. I know that family practitioners, GPs, are signed to non-disclosure agreements, which I think is shocking, and other members of the staff in the practice. I know that they're sending out our anonymized data, but now they're going to be paid to be incentivized to use experimental drugs and to nominate us or our data for experimental clinical trials that perhaps we don't know about. Perhaps we've got no clue what is going on. You know, where is our data going? It's absolutely terrifying. And this is the agenda moving forward. And not only is this the agenda, but this is an acceleration upon acceleration. This is like a super acceleration. Like we've had our foot down on the pedal, but now we're actually going to slam it right down on the floor and we're going to proceed. So we had last week in the UK, we had the government's response to the O'Shaughnessy review, and it went unheard of over here because everybody's too busy talking about a television presenter that had an affair with a runner on a morning show. So the O'Shaughnessy review got completely buried. But what it actually means for the people of the United Kingdom is that clinical trial applications are going to be sped up. Novel drug applications are going to be sped up. The world of biotech is going to be sped up. Everything has now been given the green light to be sped up, even more than it was in the first place. So whilst everybody's looking at the other news, all of these things are going unnoticed and unheard. And synthetic biology, and I didn't realize that there was a new kind of speciality in universities called futurism. You can become a futuristic scientist now. There's a futurism agenda. You know, this is a whole, we're talking about new government departments, new subjects. Who'd heard of pharmacogenomics, but people are starting to learn about it now? Who'd heard of synthetic biology, but people are starting to learn about it now? And where we're heading to is a very, very dangerous place. And unless we disable these corrupt enablers, then, you know, things are going to move on pretty quickly. And who knows where it's going to lead us, because we've got a combination of AI, genomics, biotech, and all sorts of things that are completely crazy that we wouldn't even dream in a million years are happening. But I've noticed recently Dr. James Giordano's YouTubes are starting to get taken down from YouTube. Mm. So the information that he's been putting out is being hidden now. So it's all eyes on what's ahead of us. But if we don't disable the enablers, i.e. the FDA, the EMA, the MHRA, all of these regulators that are no longer regulators, we are going to be faced with some very difficult times ahead, I think.
Right. And if we can't disable them, I argue we must walk away from them.
We can disable them. We can disable them really easily by just not giving them our data. It's as simple as that. It's don't sign into any clinical trials. If a stool specimen test, a bowel cancer test comes through your door and you're feeling healthy, don't return it. If you're asked to apply for a clinical trial, no. If you think your doctor might be sharing information with your regulator that is no longer a regulator, ask, withhold your consent, withdraw it, put it in writing, change your doctor if necessary. When you go out shopping, don't use your card, because your card will track you. It's data. They're hungry for data. Data is the new gold. So to disable them is to actually withdraw your data.
Mm-hmm. Just before we pause briefly, I want to quickly add that this too is where the field of virology is headed in terms of genomics and in terms of pointing to something and saying that is a so-called virus. Virologists now are more and more saying we don't have to do our ridiculous, and that's my word for it, but I think it's accurate, our ridiculous cell culture experiments. We're going to feed body samples, body fluid samples, right into sequencing software, and that sequence is going to be that a genomic sequence is going to be assembled, it's going to be invented. And by dint of the fact that that sequence, that invented sequence exists, therefore there is now a pathogen because of the sequence. You can very easily see the absolutely flawed, insane logic behind this, but this is where virology is headed, and it's capitalizing on genomics and many people's trust, I would say, or faith perhaps, in genomics as a watertight science, which it is anything but. So I just want to add that in there too, and what this bodes for future so-called public health emergencies of international concern, as the World Health Organization dubs them. Genomics is going to, or those in power hope it's going to allow them to get away with more insanity, I think, than what we've experienced over the last 3+ years. But we'll have to see. And one way we can try to, I don't know if we can stop it, but we can certainly put resistance in its path, is by having conversations like this one. So let's pause for a breather and continue this conversation right after this here on TNT Radio.
You should hear what Dirk Polman is talking about.
The underwater U2 incident in 1983 in Sweden. Why there was something happening in Sweden with submarines that were running around everywhere. Hundreds of them were sighted. Everybody believed it were Soviet, and it turns out, in fact, they were not Soviet.
The politics of Sweden at the time was neutrality, some kind of neutrality. And while you had an important elite in Sweden who wanted to have a direct link to the Americans. So that was a kind of divide of Sweden. And it was, from the American point of view, Sweden was extremely important because it was this kind of unsinkable aircraft carrier. You had a lot of air bases that the Americans could use in a war, and some of them were also prepared for receiving American aircraft, while the political Sweden was thinking in terms of keeping Sweden out of the war and trying to have a neutral position that wouldn't threaten directly the Soviet Union at the time. So this was a very strong conflict between the two sides.
The Dirk Polman Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Perspective with Jesse Zurawell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Perspective here on TNT Radio, where we are live 24/7. I'm Jesse Zurawell, and I am speaking with Debbie Evans, nursing correspondent for UK Column News, where she also publishes a weekly blog, which I highly recommend reading. Debbie, we are talking about many things, and acceleration is in the midst of all of it, a driver of all of it, accelerationism. And part of this accelerationism we're seeing is more injections for SARS-CoV-2 and COVID-19, these non-existent entities coming out. And Rutgers University, my alma mater, which I'm ashamed to say at this point because they've carried out experiments on children, including infants, with these injections, and did so for both Pfizer and Moderna, and are continuing to research and produce new injections. They published a paper, people affiliated with Rutgers, and Rutgers bragged about this on its website, but published a paper in the journal Vaccines very recently. It was last month, if I'm not mistaken. I apologize, it was published in April. A SARS-CoV-2 vaccine designed for manufacturability results in unexpected potency and non-waning humoral response. There's a lot to get into here that I won't, but suffice it to say that it doesn't talk about what the mechanism of poisoning, I'll say, is here. But the development is underway, and I have little doubt that this will be rolled out to the market in the not too distant future. And at the same time, we have GlaxoSmithKline seemingly, at least to me, coming out of nowhere with its SkyCovion injection, which you covered yesterday. And again, not to steal UKC's thunder where you broke this news, but this is important in terms of everything we've been talking about. Because if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, this one, admittedly, by GSK's admission includes self-assembling or allegedly includes self-assembling nanoparticles?
Yeah. And you know, just to very quickly, as a point of reference for anybody that's listening that wants to go down the same sort of rabbit holes that we go down with regards to this whole DNA agenda, because that's what we're looking at here, a DNA agenda. You might want to check out something called the Asilomar Conference. That's Asilomar, the Asilomar Conference that took place in 1975. I won't go into it now, but it's just as a point of reference. And the other thing that people might want to look at as well as a point of reference, if you want to look at more about genomics and how this agenda has been playing out and when it was planned and how it was planned, you might want to look at something that's called the Athena Agenda. That's April 2022 that came out. So that's just a couple of point of references. But with the Skycovion, this is very interesting, because to everyone else in the world, it seems to be called SkyCoV-1. Yet the MHRA have approved this new injection, and the E is left off the end. So we see it as SkyCovion. So when I refer to it as SkyCovion, please be aware that other people, and I have checked, you know, what variant and what number it is and all the rest of it, and this is still the same product. So where you may hear of it as SkyCoV-1, we're hearing of it as SkyCoV-2. And this has been released by the MHRA. This has been approved. Now, as far as I know, the MHRA are one of the first regulators. Well, they're not regulators. One of the first enablers that has approved this. And I'm very, very, very concerned about it. And I think it's probably going to be one of the biggest stories that I ever cover because of the nature of this injection. It is a self-assembling nanoparticle vaccine. So it's a completely different platform from the mRNA. It doesn't work the same as the mRNA. It comes in two multi-dose vials. So you've got an adjuvant in one and an antigen in another. So this is an injection with a bit of oomph that's meant to stop you from getting various variants that haven't even been identified as yet. So they're predicting, they've used a computer to design this, in inverted commas, vaccine, and they're using it to prevent pandemics. They're using it to stop people getting COVID. Now, the difference is with this injection is that it can be stored much easier than the likes of Pfizer and Moderna. It's much cheaper and they can scale it up. So it was actually designed for developing countries. It was designed for people that have never had a COVID vaccine, injection, jab, whatever you want to call it, before. So clearly on the manufacturer's instructions, it says this is not interchangeable with other manufacturers, and it's a primary dose. So I know for sure that the United Kingdom is fairly heavily vaccinated, or that's what the government is saying. I'm sure they're saying more than is actually in reality. But that means that anybody that hasn't already volunteered their arm for an injection is probably unlikely to do so now, nearly 3 years down the line. So the only people that they're going to be administering this injection to is people that have already had a Moderna or a Pfizer or an AstraZeneca or a Novartis or whatever, a combination, because we were one of the only countries to throw caution to the wind and say, hey, you know what? It's better to be jabbed than to have to wait for maybe a second Pfizer or a second AstraZeneca. So, you know, just grab what you can when you can. And I know for sure that they are inviting our elderly in the United Kingdom to take this injection. And I know that because my mother, who's had two Pfizer jabs and is not prepared to have any more, thank goodness, but she received a text message from the NHS inviting her for a booster, and that they were unable to tell her which vaccine it would be, but it could contain squalene. Now, SkyCoV-1 does contain squalene. So quite clearly, the MHRA, despite putting out the advice and despite the manufacturer's advice of there being no interchangeability, they are going to go ahead and inject, well, they are going ahead and they're injecting our elderly and vulnerable. Now, we've talked about democide before, Jesse, and I'm now thinking this is even more blatant. At the beginning, you know, when we didn't know what people were having, because we weren't asking people, did you have a Pfizer? Did you have a Moderna? How many people were requesting, you know, we don't want an AstraZeneca. We'd rather have a Pfizer. People were trying to cherry pick because we didn't know at the beginning. They got away with it, but they can't get away with it this time because we know that they're rolling this out. I've asked the MHRA, I've asked them over and over again, please, can you give me a good reason as to why you are rolling out this product in this country when it's only been tested in 6 countries? None of them are European. They were tested in Vietnam, in Asia, Ukraine, New Zealand. And they were only, the clinical trial only included 3,000 people. So this injection, not only is it, in my opinion, very dangerous, and nobody's going to get an accurate dose because we're talking about 2 multi-dose vials here, and we're talking about somebody's got to mix not just a bit of saline or water with a bit of powder, but they've got to take solution from one. They might have to dilute it first. I don't know if it's already diluted. But they have to mix 2 solutions. Who's going to do that? Is it going to be a pharmacist? Is it going to be a volunteer? Is it going to be a nurse? Is it going to be a doctor? Does anyone know? Does anyone care? So not only have we got that, but we've also got, this is a subunit nanoparticle that's being produced in E. coli. Now, this is very interesting to me, E. coli, because this is an enterovirus, and I'm seeing a lot of news about E. coli and enteroviruses. And it's also using Chinese hamster ovary. And that doesn't sound pleasant at the best of times. So this is an injection that has not been tested, we've got no data on gene toxicity or carcinogenicity. We've got no data on interchangeability. We've got no data on pregnant women. In fact, that's terrifying because there are no studies on pregnant women, children, or breastfeeding mums, but it's licensed for over 18s. So what if the over 18s are jabbed and then maybe find out that they're pregnant? Or, you know, we're talking about men as well, so it affects sperm, possibly affects fertility. So how do we know that these youngsters that we're jabbing at 18, 19 aren't going to be having a family in a year, 2 years' time? And what effect is that going to be? And then on top of it, just to make matters even worse, this is a 2-dose injection. So the effectiveness is 0 pretty much after the first dose. You have to have the second dose in order for it to be effective. So there are many, many, many reasons why this is a very, very worrying step forward for the MHRA. And of course, if we go back and we go back to the money, you know, let's track the money, we go straight back to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. You know, this is it's blatant. Yeah, a CEPI and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And as far as I'm aware, Bill Gates, SK Chemicals are a South Korean company. And as far as I'm aware, I think it's the same SK, but I believe that Bill Gates has been donating or colluding or collaborating with SK with regards to his nuclear power plant that he's opened, TerraPower, the company that he owns, TerraPower. So there are a lot of little threads that lead back to SK. But I'm very, very, very concerned that this is an injection that clearly, clearly has been designed for developing countries. The United Kingdom is regarded or meant to be, and I've always said we're not developed when it comes to the NHS and when it comes to our health system. We're very much a fourth world country, to be honest. We don't have a safe and equitable access to healthcare. But it should never be rolled out, in my opinion, from the research that I've looked at and from the lectures that I've seen on this injection, shouldn't be rolled out in developed countries. So I've asked the MHRA, on what grounds are they rolling this out? Because as far as I'm aware, The WHO told us all to stand down. You know, COVID was no longer a global threat, although we've got to be really careful. We know we mustn't be too complacent. We must be careful. But then I see all of a sudden now we've got another alarm bell ringing in China where there's a new COVID variant and there people don't care anymore. You know, they even said in the article that I read, the people in China are kind of going, oh, yeah, here we go again. So people are more complacent this time. So, yeah, it's worrying because I believe that this injection, if it's approved by the MHRA, then it's only a matter of time before it'll be entering the USA, Europe, the rest of Europe, Australia, New Zealand. So keep your eyes out for what your enablers are doing.
So it's under so-called emergency use authorization right now in the UK?
It's Black Triangle. I'm pretty sure it's emergency use. That's a good question, actually, Jesse. I haven't checked it because I would then question, well, why? Because we're not in an emergency situation. So right. Is this just another random? It appears to me another random. Yeah, I mean, it's random authorization. It's just, we are heading into the world of jabs. And if you're not jabbed with a needle, it'll be an aerosol. You know, they'll think of getting whichever. These are different platforms. We're talking about loads of different platforms here. So just because we're talking about a COVID vaccine, everybody thinks, yep, right, I've had my COVID vaccine. But it's what platform was it? Was it a viral vector platform? Was it a nanoparticle like this one? Was it an mRNA platform? So everybody's had different things at different times. And I think the big takeaway for me from all of this is synthetic biology, because now, you know, we're looking at everything's being artificially geoengineered. Everything's being made. Nothing is natural anymore. And what really worries me too is I'll have to dig it out again, my notes, but there is a company that are designing a way to remove E. coli from your gut. Now, E. coli needs to be in your gut. That's healthy. Yep. That's where it should be. And we need it. But scientists now almost want to, according to, and I've been watching a lot of Celeste Solem recently, the whistleblower from FEMA, she's incredible. And she would suggest that the agenda would appear to be to dismantle human beings. That's what they're doing. Build Back Better really was Build Back Humans Better, but we have to dismantle human beings first. So we have to pretty much break gut them. Yeah, just gut them, you know, just and clear this, them out, including the bacteria that's good. Everything that's good about us is going to be stripped.
Right. And this is so important to underline, because getting back to the investment aspect of this, that model works particularly well. Perhaps it can only work, the social impact investing model, with broken people. You need people to be broken in order to put them on a track to manipulate their behavior, predict their behavior, commodify their behavior. So that's at least in part, I would argue, what this is about in terms of breaking people down. There's also the benefit of killing people off and what that does in terms of, and I'm not saying it's a benefit, it's a benefit to the psychopaths who are behind this. It's an atrocity. It's a crime against humanity. But there's a benefit to them in terms of, let's say, a cull of the elderly and the pensions that won't have to be paid out, and how that money can therefore be retained by the government and go toward unpayable debts, but still it stays within the coffers of government, and it's no longer a liability, so to speak. So there's that benefit from it. And just to add some more information on Sky COV1 or Sky COVON, at precisionvaccinations.com, there's a page dedicated to it. And it reads in part that this is a recombinant protein-based vaccine made of proteins that form tiny particles studded with fragments of the pandemic SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus. These nanoparticles were designed by scientists at the University of Washington School of Medicine and advanced into clinical trials by SK Bioscience and GlaxoSmithKline with financial support from the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, or CEPI. In addition, SkyCoV-1 includes, as you pointed out, GSK's pandemic adjuvant AS03, a substance which, as you pointed out, contains squalene, which is hugely poisonous in and of itself, to help strengthen the immune response to the vaccine. It then goes on to say, there's a lot of very interesting information here, but it goes on to say, as of May 30, 2023, SK Bioscience had applied for an emergency use listing from the World Health Organization and marketing authorization from the European Medicines Agency. And SkyCovion, the language here goes back and forth between Covion and CoV-1. SkyCovion is the world's first ever vaccine developed using the Rose TTA Fold, a software tool that uses deep learning to quickly and accurately predict protein structures based on limited information. The Rose TTA Fold was designed as a three-track neural network developed by the University of Washington. So synthetic biology all the way here. I don't even know if you can call if biology is appropriate here. This is just synthetic destruction.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is extremely dangerous. And, you know, SK have got plenty more planned. They're not stopping at just this SkyCoV on SkyCoV-1. They've got more, like a universal jab, so where they're going to be putting all sorts in. I mean, this is very dangerous, and it's coming to somewhere close to you soon. People need to be watching out for it, because we're not in a high state of alert at the moment, and this news just kind of dribbled out in the UK. If we hadn't have been looking for it, we wouldn't have found it. The lecture on YouTube from Dame June Rain, if we hadn't have been looking for it, we wouldn't have found it. But now we have, and now we can see what's going on. We can try and warn other countries and warn other people to just watch. Keep your eyes open, keep your ears to the ground, because whilst your headlines are being dominated by all sorts of other stories, these are the sort of things that are coming into your country and you don't know that it's happening. And we need to be aware of it. And I'm particularly worried about all the genomic screening that's going to go on with neonates. And as you've said, you know, from birth to grave, but we're even going to be valuable when we're dead. You know, and, mm-hmm. and there's going to be a time when some people might not be able to die. You know, we have to look at, there's some very difficult conversations ahead. And I think they need to be had as soon as possible. But clearly this new platform, this new injection, this is just the start. There's more to come. And I think we need to look very carefully at what's in our food, what's in our water. And what they're so far advanced, Jesse, with so many things. I mean, you've only got to listen to somebody like Celeste Solem, who's talking about hair bots and hair nano hair, and it's just mind blowing. But we just have to put out the news as best we can to warn people, because if it happens in one country, it'll happen in another, and it'll spread like the virus. It'll spread.
Right, the fear virus. And
yeah,
we're not trying to drum up fear here, but point out what's happening. And the last thing I want to point out as we come to a close, unfortunately, is that on this precisionvaccinations.com page for SkyCoV-1, it talks about a booster dose to be administered approximately 7 months after the primary series, so approximately 7 months after the second injection of this. So they're already talking about a booster for this. And there's a timeline at the bottom of the page showing that the application for conditional marketing goes back to almost a year ago at this point, which is not surprising because these things are in the works well before we learn about them. But it also points to how quickly the timeline is now for these poisons to get to market, so to speak. And that's something you and I have been talking about, and we're seeing this in action. And now we're seeing it with allegedly self-assembling nanoparticles. We must be wary of what they claim is in these things and what they can do and what is actually in them and what they can actually do. But we're presenting the information as best we can. And Debbie, I look forward to doing that again with you next week, despite the darkness of much of this.
Thank you, Jesse. And despite the darkness, you know, if you've got a gift of music or poetry, then give it to someone near to you and cheer them up, because it's not all doom and gloom. We still have love in our hearts. Good night. God bless everyone.